Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by not Pete Donaldson again. Where's Pete Donaldson gone? Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, it's another week without the great Pete. He's off building a snowman in the fields of England somewhere. But actually, it's my fault again. I'm on the road at the moment, travelling around the country. So it's been a bit hard to find the time to meet up with him and actually do the podcast. So this week we're joined by another guest. We've had Norm Tokyo Lens recently. We've had Sharla in Japan, and now we're joined by Joey the Anime Man. You might have seen him Journey Across Japan. Joey, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, good. Got really bad heartburn.
Yeah, I've noticed.
This is terrible.
You ate like a packet of crisps beforehand, and you just like, I can't breathe.
It's shocking. I ate a really big bag of crisps, and didn't go down too well. But it's good to see you, Joey. Yeah. After our adventures around the mountains of Japan, It's nice to be in a room with you once again.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the dust has settled.
I can't believe that's already been, what, a month since we recorded that?
Yeah.
Maybe longer?
Since early October we filmed it, right?
Jesus. So it's been, what, two months?
2 months, and the last episode came out, I think, three weeks ago. So, yes, if you haven't seen Joey before, he runs a YouTube channel, The Anime Man. He is the foremost expert in the world of anime and manga, isn't that right, Joe?
I guess so, yeah.
Tell us a bit about yourself for folks that don't know who you are.
So I'm Joey. I'm Australian-born Japanese, and I talk about Japanese cartoons on the internet for a living.
Japanese cartoons.
That's essentially it. If you like Japanese culture, Japanese language, nerd culture in Japan, just any weird, quirky stuff that you can find in and out of Japan and Japanese culture, then I probably talk about it in some aspect.
And you've been going how long on YouTube now?
I started May of 2013, so what's that, 7.5 years?
Bloody
almost
hell.
8 years, yeah.
I've had quite the wild ride.
And yeah.
Well, that means I've been doing it longer than you then.
Well, you started 2012, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you have been doing a lot.
Good God.
So you're technically my senpai.
I'm your senpai.
Yeah.
You're superior.
Yeah.
Although you've made a lot more videos than I have.
Well, yeah, because I used to upload daily.
Bloody hell. How did you upload daily?
I don't even know how I did it. Because, I mean, now I upload, you know, maybe once every 6-7 days, right? So once a week. And I've struggled to do that now. And I do this stuff full time now. But I somehow managed to upload daily for like the first 2.5 years while I was a full-time uni student.
Good God.
So I was just, yeah, it was uni and then YouTube, uni, YouTube, uni, YouTube for 2.5 years.
That is quite the life.
I don't
know how you did that. I mean, I struggled. I started out doing this when I was a teacher, right? When I was a teacher and I used to go home and try and bash one out once a month, let alone daily.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I mean, to be fair, my production value has increased tenfold since the daily uploads.
So. Has it?
Yeah.
No, of course it has. Come a long way since those
days. I went from shitty Let's Plays of anime games to actually producing some good videos. So.
But if you're into anime, manga, Japanese pop culture, if you're otaku, Joey's your man, really.
I guess so.
He's the man to go for. And we're currently in a hotel in Yamagata. Mm-hmm. You may have seen the other day, yesterday, we did a live show, didn't we, Joey? Christmas live show with Natsuki and Sharla and Aki, your partner. Mm-hmm. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was fun.
You enjoy that?
Yeah, that was chaos.
Chaos with KFC.
Yeah.
We sat down and ordered the KFC Christmas bucket. Very popular thing in Japan because they have turkey.
Supposedly.
To be honest, apparently 3.6 million Japanese families sit down every year to have a KFC Christmas, and yet I've never met anyone in Japan who's done it except me.
So 3.6 million families are doing Christmas wrong, in other words.
Pretty much, like Natsuki. He'd never had it.
Yeah.
I guess that was his first time.
Well, that was the first time I had it, too. Yeah.
And did it exceed your expectations?
No, to be honest. I mean, I never really used to eat KFC in general anyway. I've probably had KFC in Japan, like, twice in my life.
It's not as good, is it? It's pretty lackluster.
I never even really liked it back in Australia, either, to be honest.
So it's good in the UK, but not so much in Japan. And it came to about 5,000 yen. For that, we got a staggering amount of chicken.
Yeah, that was an excruciating amount of chicken, to be honest.
And a Christmas cake that I didn't actually have a slice of in hindsight.
I don't think anyone had a slice of it.
Where did it go?
I don't know. I think Natsuki's wife just kind of took it away and was like, this is mine now.
Asami sneakily walked off with it. Actually, Natsuki was a real dick yesterday because we arrived at his place, Natsuki's house, where we had the meal. And we were all there. There was me, Joey, Sharla, Aki, Asami, his wife. And Natsuki was an hour late. We don't know where he went. To this day, I still don't know where he went. But by the time he arrived, the entire meal was stone cold and thoroughly...
We'd already started on half the KFC meal, so...
What a dick.
I think he ended up having, like, two pieces of chicken by the end of it. He was like, this is great! This is exactly what I was hoping for!
Cheeky devil. But we did do a live show, and you can check that out on the Abroad Perspective channel. We did it for about 2 hours, and we covered various topics, and Natsuki did sing a rendition of Last Christmas.
Over your beatboxing.
Over my beatboxing. He knocked it out of the park. We trained him for like 20 minutes on the lyrics of Last Christmas. He did it right, actually.
Yeah.
It's his favourite Christmas song. So.
Oh, there you go.
Along with War Is Over by John Lennon. He's not so good at that one. but we'll kick things off with Story of the Week before we get into interviewing Joey. And this week's story comes from Sean in Montreal. And hopefully it's a nice story. We've had some pretty unpleasant stories in the last few weeks. The last week we had an episode from a guy called Tom, a British guy. He came to Kyoto and was sick all over an entire train. And all the people on the train. And he was wearing a face mask. So it was like... It wasn't a fountain of sick, it was more like an explosion.
I've seen that happen on a train as
You've
well.
You've seen that happen?
Where someone's thrown inside their mask. God. It was horrible.
I hope it wasn't a British person.
But also hilarious.
I hope it wasn't... Could have been Tom.
Yeah,
could
maybe.
Could have been our beloved listener, Tom.
What's up, Tom?
Right, this one's from Sean. Hopefully it's not as unpleasant. It says, hey guys, a couple of years ago, my family and I took a summer vacation to Japan. Here's a little story that I find quite funny and unique to Japan, and I hope you do too.
Go on.
We had spent a few days in Osaka. We were heading to Kyoto one morning. So we were waiting on the platform for the train. My mum, being a North American suburban woman, needs her coffee every morning.
I can relate.
I can relate as well, definitely. So she popped into the 7-Eleven on the platform. As she was putting her cup in the coffee machine, the train pulled in, so she panicked and rushed out to join us. With my mum pissed, we boarded the train and found our seats. She was ranting about how she'd just wasted 200 yen, about $2, and the train still hadn't left, so she should have gotten her coffee anyway.
Right.
3 minutes passed and the train still hadn't moved, making my mum even angrier. Really embarrassing for us it was, because she was making a scene, which is something Japanese people don't do.
Yeah.
Suddenly, a woman wearing a green 7-Eleven apron runs in from the car ahead of us with a coffee in hand, yelling, "Hot coffee! Hot coffee!" She looks at my mum, cheers a little, and hands my mum her coffee before running off the train. The train then left this platform, and thankfully my mum was shut up for the 40-minute ride. I just found this really unique, as my experience of 7-Eleven was a trip to Boston. A trip to Boston, where I accidentally spilled my drink on the floor, and the employee just handed me a bucket and a mop and said, I don't get paid enough for this. Anyway, thank you for all your content, guys. Enjoyed Escape to Fuji. It helped me get through exams. Have a wonderful day to both Chris and Pete from Sean in Montreal, Canada, and Joey.
That was a great story.
I love the difference there between 7-Eleven in the US and 7-Eleven in Japan. They'll go the extra mile. They'll literally follow you onto a train to the ends of the earth to give you your 200 yen
coffee.
Meanwhile,
in Boston, it's like, clean your own shit.
The floor's not going to mop itself. But what a humbling story. What a nice story.
That's like, I agree. That is very uniquely Japan. I feel that just the extreme customer service that Japan provides, even in a, you know, even in a convenience store like 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
Which is someplace you'd never expect that kind of service, right? Like, you'd expect it maybe in like an expensive restaurant or a hotel or something, but
they do go the extra mile.
Yeah.
And it's not just staff as well. We had a story about a month ago, this guy, a guy on a bike in Osaka just started speaking to a random guy at the side of the road, and he was like, let's grab a coffee. This Japanese guy. Like, do you want to get a coffee? And the guy's like, oh no, I can't, I'm busy.
Yeah.
And the guy like crossed the road with his bicycle and heard, oh, sumimasen behind him. Yeah. And the guy, this random stranger, just came running over with a can of coffee and was like, here, have this.
Oh, wow.
It's rather surreal.
I had a similar experience, or Aki had a similar experience, my partner. She was walking to the station, and I guess she didn't realize that she had accidentally had some loose change in her pocket.
Right.
And we're talking, you know, maybe like 1 yen, 5 yen levels of loose change.
Yeah, yeah.
And suddenly she heard this like tapping of shoes from behind her. Someone was running towards her, and she could hear this sumimasen, sumimasen of this young woman. And she turns around, and this woman is holding a 1 yen coin. And she said, otoshimashita yo, you dropped this.
Oh my God.
So she ran up to Aki to just give her back the 1 yen. She's like, I don't want it. It's 1 yen. It's 1 cent. But she just took it anyway. I was like, all right, cool.
She probably thought it was like littering. I've had it in the past. I've dropped some litter by accident.
Right.
Because I'm nice. I wouldn't actually do that on purpose. And like people are like running over like, oh, you dropped your Kit Kat wrapper.
Right.
Like, oh, thank you.
I mean, that makes sense, right? Because there's no rubbish bins on the streets of Japan.
That's
more,
true.
More often than not. But 1 yen?
1 yen.
Why would you just not pocket that?
She could have pocketed 1 yen.
Yeah.
And bought a nothing.
Even if I was, you know, the best Samaritan in the world, I think, well, it's only 1 cent, you know?
What could you get with 1 yen in Japan?
Nothing.
Just
like, actually nothing. I don't think you can get anything with 1 yen. Maybe like 30 years ago, during the Showa era, you could.
I find the only thing they're good for are going to a temple and leaving it in front of a shrine or something.
Yeah, or, you know, if it's like 149 yen and you don't want to break a 50. It's like, oh, I got 4 1 yen coins.
We get a lot of listeners. We get a lot of you guys actually asking us, like, what to do with money, like spare change in Japan.
Yeah, I have so many friends who come to Japan and they just leave me just giant bags of loose change because they don't know what to do. I was like, all right, I'll take it from you.
I remember in my first apartment, just down the road from here, actually, where I lived for the first 3 years, I had... By the time I finished my 3 years, I had like 3 buckets filled with 1 yens and 10 yens. And I took them. What you can do in Japan, you can go to the bank and just pour them in an ATM machine.
Oh, yeah.
And I had like $150 in like 1 yen coins.
Oh, wow.
And I was...
I guess that's what you can do, huh?
It's good. I spent that.
I mean, if you live here, you can do that.
You can do that.
If you're visiting, it's a little harder, I feel.
Maybe we should set up a business where tourists coming to Japan can give you the money that they want to keep. I feel that's quite sinister. Just give it to charity.
I believe that's just called theft. Just nice theft.
Nice theft.
Yeah.
That's a good company name right there, isn't it? Nice theft. Right then, Joey, let's turn our attention to your good self then. Mm-hmm. So a lot of listeners probably don't know who you are necessarily.
Right.
I like to think they do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people listening to this don't even watch A Born Japan.
It's really?
Bizarre. It's very bizarre.
Oh.
World of podcasting, very different listeners.
Fair enough.
So what I'd like to... So you might have seen Joey, I'd like to think you've seen Joey, in the recent Escape to Fuji series, Journey Across Japan, where Joey and I travelled for 6 days through central Japan, had a bit of... had a blast.
A romp.
A bit of a blast. That doesn't really make sense. Had a romp. Had a romp through various interesting locations, abandoned love hotels, abandoned quarries, what else was there? Was
lots that of it? Strange stuff. Museum.
The Showa Museum. Bathtubs of increasingly bizarre... increasingly bizarre bathtubs.
And a Fever Dream Museum as well.
Yes, the last episode. Yeah, the last episode of Journey Across Japan, it was really weird. Like, it was an episode that didn't need to happen.
Right.
I was really clutching at straws, because the last day of Journey Across Japan was like a backup.
Mm.
In case we didn't see Mount Fuji, but we saw it on day 5.
Right.
And I thought we could have just ended it there. Like, if you watch episode 5 Mount Fuji, where Joey and I go to a British theme park, it could have just ended there. When we're like standing on the precipice of this cliff overlooking Fuji. It should have been like, oh, bye everyone, bye. But we didn't end it there. We We carried on to Izu Peninsula and went to a bloody museum that was so surreal.
That still appears in my nightmares.
It was horrendous. Like, it was kind of cool. And if you watch the video, you can see that it's like in a greenhouse and there's some
Yeah, but what you
exhibits.
Showed in the video was like actually like 5% of what we actually saw.
This is the thing, right? What you don't know is, if you've seen this video, Joey and I go to this crazy museum. And as we were leaving the museum, we'd actually filmed everything. I saw like another door to like a basement level.
Yeah.
We went in there and the things we saw in there, it was all like... like it was like animals...
It was like animals giving birth and like having intercourse, and it's like, this is how baby animals are made, and it showed these like really realistic and grotesque like cross sections of the inside of a cow's stomach, and it's just like, I didn't, just things you didn't need to see, essentially.
Wasn't family friendly.
No.
Wasn't going in Journey Across Japan.
I remember as well, the moment you stepped into that room and we kind of just dumbfounded and just awestruck at what we were looking at. I just heard you from a distance going, there's no fucking way we can put this in the video.
And I didn't even pull out the camera.
No.
It was that bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It's pretty messed up. So let's hear your story then, Joey. What? Mm-hmm. So you are half Japanese.
Yes.
Half Australian.
Yep.
And how long have you lived in Japan now?
Well, I moved here officially about 5 years ago. So when I graduated Sydney University, because I just went to school in Australia. So the moment I graduated Sydney University, I was already like at a level where I could do YouTube full time.
Mm.
So I thought I was going to move to Japan anyway, even if YouTube wasn't my job, because I had interned at a bunch of Japanese IT companies.
And your mum's Japanese, right?
Yeah.
So you'd come to Japan a fair bit.
Oh yeah. We used to visit every year for about a month to go visit my family.
And you were already fluent by the time you got here.
Yeah, so I passed the N1 test when I was 17.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Pretty young. How did you learn Japanese back in Australia? Did your mum, like, just speak to you in Japanese?
Yeah, so my mum had this kind of, like, unspoken rule where she wouldn't respond to me if I didn't talk to her in Japanese.
That's genius.
Yeah, so because, you know, in Australia, English is already such a prevalent language, and my dad only knows English. So my mum, I guess, thought, well, I guess the only way that my son will be able to learn Japanese, you know, in the field is to just force it upon him, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where I won't even entertain a conversation with him unless it's in Japanese.
Jesus.
So I learned that from a very young age because, you know, getting ignored by your mum at age 2 or 3 is very traumatic.
So if you went to your mum, "Mum, I want a chocolate biscuit."
Yeah, she just straight up ignores
me. No.
But if I said, "Okasan, chocolate hoshii," then she'd be like, "Ah, wakatta."
Oh, wow.
Like, and she'd just respond to it. And I guess, yeah. But then again, because I went to Japan quite a bit when I was young, I guess I...
You had that motivation.
Yeah, I had the motivation, and also I guess I already had the like very heavy interest in the Japanese language and just Japanese culture in general. And I think from a very young age, I immediately knew, I think, Japanese and the Japanese way of thinking and the Japanese way of life is more suited to my personality than Australia. So
did you understand the Japanese way of thinking before you got here?
Maybe not so much as now, but I guess just Japanese culture and the language, I had more of an interest in than English. And not to say I didn't like the Australian way of life or anything, but...
The Australian... What is the Australian way of life?
Just, you know, laid back, just chilling in the summer sun, I guess. Just having a cracking open a beer at the beach, yeah?
It's a very different way of life to Japan. I think Australia... The Australian way of life is probably more different to Japanese culture than the British way of life.
I'd say so.
Yeah, because people in Australia tend to be more laid back and relaxed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Don't know if this is just my British impression. Yeah, like, everyone in Australia, just surfing, innit? Barbecues, surfing, eating some kangaroos.
Yeah.
Like,
honestly, like, that is kind of what it's like. It's just very laid back and relaxed and very, you know, in that sense, very similar to British and American culture where there's no such thing as... stranger danger. Like people, just strangers can you can strike up a conversation in, you know, a supermarket with anybody, and no one will really bat an eye. Whereas in Japan, it's a little bit different.
Oh god, never do that.
Yeah,
it'd just be so awkward.
Yeah, right. Well, so yeah, and it's not, you know, I didn't mind that aspect of it at all because I'm usually okay with talking to strangers and stuff like that. But I guess my understanding and, I guess, appreciation for Japanese culture, and because my grandma lived in, like, the middle of the mountains in Miyagi,
Right, not so, far from where I live. Right?
Yeah, yeah, like quite far away, which is where my mom was born and raised. I guess I learned about the whole quote-unquote Inaka lifestyle.
The old countryside
the
lifestyle.
The old countryside, Japanese countryside lifestyle very early on in my life. And I really liked that. Like, just kind of, you know, the town where I spent a lot of my childhood was, you know, in this, you know, the next door neighbor's house would be 500 meters down the road.
Oh, wow.
And in between, it would just be nothing but rice fields. And I would just go out with my sister to the rice fields and just find our own fun.
Go out to the rice fields and find our fun.
Yeah, because, well, you know, what can you do in a...
How romantic.
What can you do in a 50-plus-year-old house in the middle of a rice field with, like, barely any internet back at the time, barely any toys, you know, one tiny CRT TV that might play something interesting, you know, every hour or so. It's like, what else can you do?
You're very optimistic about Japanese television.
Yeah.
But now you live in the sort of Tokyo area, right?
Yeah.
In the... I mean, how's that?
I mean, it's okay. I don't live in Tokyo. I don't live in central Tokyo. I don't think I ever could, to be honest. I don't mind going into central Tokyo every now and then. But I definitely prefer the more kind of halfway point between country and city.
So, I mean, as a YouTuber, you can pretty much choose where you live, I guess.
Oh, but yeah.
Why were you drawn towards living in Tokyo as opposed to, you know, your family living in Miyagi, where I am?
Yeah.
Could have been, you know, could have been abroad in Japan with Joey down the road.
Yeah,
in
honestly.
In a different life.
Honestly, when I first moved here, that did cross my mind. That because
I want to live near abroad in Japan.
Well, no, not that. I would have been on the other side of town.
Oh.
But but because I actually knew more about Sendai than I did about Tokyo.
Right.
When I first moved here. Because I have family who live in Saitama as well.
Yeah.
But I don't have any family that lives in Tokyo. So the only time I would ever experience Tokyo before moving here was when I went to go see my cousins in Saitama and we would go into Tokyo together.
Okay.
But I knew so much more about Sendai and the general Sendai area because my grandma lived there, my granddad lived there, and that's where I spent a lot of my childhood.
That's cool, though. So you do have an appreciation for the countryside.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I do find that's a problem. A lot of my friends, I often invite friends up to see me and talk, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'll come one day, but they don't. You're like one of about two people who's actually made an effort.
Right.
It's difficult getting on a bullet train for an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
But, like, I have a lot of friends who live in... All my friends pretty much live in Tokyo. I'd say, like, 95%. And, you know, a lot of them have never come to the countryside because Tokyo is like a bubble. And I think that's a real tragedy because Tokyo is great by all accounts, but, like, the real Japan, as some people call it. Like, all the best bits in Japan for me, the bits where all my favourite memories are, the more profound moments, I always have them out and about in the countryside or in other more quiet, peaceful cities.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I've explored every nook and cranny of Tokyo there is. I mean, I don't think I could ever do that in my entire lifetime because there's just so much you can do in the greater Tokyo area.
Yeah.
But after a while, it's you kind of just look around at the city and think, oh, I mean, yeah, this is cool, but there's so much more of Japan. There's 46 other prefectures I could also go to explore. And I think especially this year is really, you know, going around with like Journey Across Japan and just kind of, you know, detoxing from work and the internet by going, you know, out of cities and whatnot has really, I guess, inspired me to just explore more of this country because, you know, my appreciation for Japanese culture did stem from the Inaka lifestyle of the mountains of Miyagi. So I kind of wanted to go back to that lifestyle and, you know, scenery and whatnot and kind of revitalize, oh yeah, you know, this is why I originally really liked this country because of this kind of lifestyle.
Absolutely. I mean, just to see this afternoon, Joey and I went to a temple called Mount Hagoro. And I did a video there with Ryota, if you want to check it out, called Escaping to a Japanese Secluded Mountain Temple. I think that's what it's titled. Really awkward title.
Right.
I think it's Escaping to a Secluded Japanese Mountain Temple, I think it's called. And Ryota and I went there in the snow. It was very beautiful. And I took you there. And how did you feel going there, Mount Hagoro?
I loved it.
It's beautiful, isn't
it? Yeah, it's so great. Just snow-capped.
Hayao Miyazaki, innit?
Yeah, it was. It was very Ghibli. Honestly, it was very Ghibli. It was very magical.
There was like a waterfall coming out of the snow.
Yeah.
Like a red pagoda, like, you know.
Oh, I love stuff like that.
Pagodas and torii gates. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And for me, that is like I feel very
the
lucky.
The real Japanese experience.
The real Japan. The real Japan. God, the amount of times you hear the real Japan.
The real Japan.
Easy way to market rural Japan, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, I'm glad you've kind of enjoyed your time out here and we got to see some stuff amongst the snow.
I really do though. My goal in life is to just go to all 47 prefectures.
Wow.
And I think I've...
How many have you done? I worked out I've done 41, I think.
41. I think I've done maybe 30?
Rubbish.
Yeah, nah. maybe not even. I think maybe around half.
The race is on. Who can get to all 47
Well, you're definitely doing that first. I mean, I've never been to Shikoku or Kyushu or any of very little of West Japan.
Well, hopefully we can make up for that later this year because Joey and I and Natsuki have already talked about doing another series for Journey Across Japan. And Kyushu is in our sights. I've been there briefly. For Journey Across Japan, the original series, which didn't go so well because by the time I went to Kyushu, I was dead. and Emma, Tokidoki Emma joined and famously wasn't in any of the videos because I was screwed. But I think you've never been to Kyushu.
No.
Natsuki's been... I think Natsuki's ever been, actually.
Yeah.
And Natsuki is from Kyushu, historically, his family.
Oh, yeah.
His name's Natsuki Asor. Yeah. And Asor, his family name is from.
Right?
Yeah, Kumamoto, yeah. Mount Asor, that region, with Japan's biggest volcano. So, yeah, we could maybe we've still got to kind of find a theme for it. And I'm open
to
ideas.
Maybe that could be the theme, right?
Yeah.
Retrace Natsuki's roots.
Find Natsuki's family roots on Journey Across Japan 3. What would you even call that? Journey Across Japan 3, Search of
Natsuki's
Natsuki.
Spiritual journey.
Natsuki's spiritual journey.
Ancestral spiritual journey.
Would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we can make it work with a slight tweak
Natsuki
to the title.
Finds out who he really is on Journey Across Japan.
I want to find out who Natsuki really is.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
This week on Stakhanov.
Over on the Luke and Pete Show, we've been discussing our usual nonsense from Disney princesses to fizzy lagers and a whole load more. Here's a taster of what's been on the show.
For some reason, our little recording system has got this piece of music installed. It. I think it's incidental music in a sex ed BBC Two 10 a.m. kind of job.
No way!
It is.
It's too groovy. It's too groovy.
Yeah, it's just like now on BBC Two, sex and your child.
Meanwhile, over on WrestleMe, we've been doing the 12 days of WrestleMemus, which you can find on our Patreon or your favourite podcast player.
That's why also America is, like, leading the world in serial killers, you know, because they have room. They have room
they have
to dismantle, to dismember,
dismantle, dismember,
to stuff
yes.
to make marionettes.
Mm-hmm.
Over here, very difficult to be a serial killer.
I would knock into things. I'd get blood everywhere.
But there's always some nosy beak, isn't there? Someone sticking their nose in where it doesn't belong.
All that and more at Stakhanov.
But on the subject of YouTube, then, let's turn your attention to YouTube. Mm-hmm. How many subscribers you got now? We always joke about it, that you've got more than me, and your Twitter and of course your Twitter verified. Bastard.
I think I'm approaching 2.6 million?
2.6 million.
On my main channel.
Well, aren't you lucky?
Yeah.
I think Abroad Japan is 1.96 or something ridiculous.
I think you're going to hit 2 before the end of the year.
No.
No?
I don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, you're growing pretty quickly this year, though.
The thing, though, and I know you and I have talked about this, you just... After you hit like a million, you kind of don't really take... You kind of take your eye off the numbers.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not that big a deal, really. It's more about the videos.
It's more about, will the next video even be good?
Exactly. Yeah. You've always got to try to find something new and original. What kind of videos have you been working on recently?
Recently, it hasn't come out. I don't know when this is coming out, but 2021,
this podcast is coming out tomorrow.
Oh, okay, never mind then.
So you can't spoil too much.
I can't spoil too much, but 2021 is kind of going to be... I don't want to say, like, major shift in content, because I do want to stick to my roots, but I guess more of a experimentation on what kind of content would work on my channel.
Well, I mean, because you are native speaker, Japanese level.
Yeah.
You could definitely use that to your advantage in a way that I can't. Like, I could speak Japanese, but I still feel a bit uncomfortable being me on camera speaking Japanese. I kind of feel like it's not me.
Right. I definitely want to use that more, and the fact that, you know, I can speak Japanese and I have this really unique skill that I am native level.
Actually, going to that, I mean, do you find you are very different in when you switch to Japanese? Do you find your personality is slightly different? Because when we did the live show yesterday, I saw a comment saying it's interesting. The person wrote, like, it was interesting seeing Joey speak to Natsuki in both English and Japanese. Because when you speak to Natsuki in English, you're kind of informal. But then he said, the commenter said that when you speak to Natsuki in Japanese, you use more honorifics, you're more polite.
Well, yeah, because he's older.
Because he's older, right?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just...
But that's interesting, because... That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I did a whole video on this where I kind of explored why, because I personally have never noticed it.
Right,
because I don't really look at myself in third person that way when I speak when I switch languages. But yeah, I made a whole video exploring that whole topic because I got so many of my followers saying, yeah, Joey's really different when he speaks Japanese. Like, he's a completely different person. His personality is completely different. And I thought to myself, like, really? Is it really that different?
Well, I mean, yeah, you seem more polite, less outspoken. Like, I know I've noticed that with...
You're so much less of a dick when you speak Japanese.
To some extent. But I've noticed that with my co-host, Ryotaro. Like, when we do videos together, like, he's a dick in English. and that's the Ryotaro that I know.
Right.
And love. Begrudgingly, but when he speaks Japanese, he's very polite and more.
It's hard to sound like a reserved. Dick in Japanese, I feel.
Well, I think if you are very blunt in Japanese and sarcastic or whatever, you come across as a complete, really, like a really bad dick, horrible, like you, obnoxious.
Yeah, you come off as really.
Not in a funny way either.
No, you come off as really, I guess, conceited. That's probably the best way to say it, and that's just a personality trait that no Japanese person really likes.
Yeah, and if you know, if you do act like that, you will shatter any friendships you'd have.
It's the quickest way to burn bridges.
Yeah, so that's why I think people don't do that. You have to be very conscious.
I mean, I'm like that, you know, towards my friends, I feel, where I can be a little more informal and dickish, but when I'm doing an interview with an author, for example, or a voice actor, which I've done in the past, I can't just be like, hey, what's up, bitch? Like, I can't, you know, I can't do the Japanese equivalent of that.
I've seen YouTubers that actually speak like that when interviewing people of importance.
Yeah, so, I don't know how they English. Have the audacity to do that. I just can't do it. I can't muster up.
What are some of the highs and lows you found being a YouTuber? The giddy highs and lows.
Well, the highs is I get to do a job.
The highs
that
is.
I like. The highs is.
The highs is.
The highs are. That I get to do a job that I like, and I get to be my own boss, I guess.
Right.
And I get to choose my own work schedule. You know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. Lows?
Well, the lows, you get demonetized quite a lot.
Not as often as I used to.
Right.
Definitely during the first wave of demonetization 2 years ago or three years ago, whenever that was. Yeah, it was like every other video I was getting demonetized. But I think recently, I don't know if it's because I changed my content or I've just gotten smarter with how I advertise my content. I think I've only gotten like 6 or 7 videos demonetized.
I mean, that's still quite a lot. The only video I've had demonetized this year was the trailer for Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji.
Oh, yeah. You're telling me about that.
If you go on the Abroad Japan channel and watch this trailer video, in the opening like 5-10 seconds, Natsuki goes, fuck. And on YouTube, you can actually swear once. You can say, like, fuck. But what they don't like is if you swear multiple times in the opening minute of a YouTube video, then it gets demonetized without question.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that.
So you say 5 or 6 videos is a lot, but I've uploaded close to 200 videos this year.
Bloody hell. Yeah. 200 videos?
Right.
How's that possible?
Well, because...
Are you including Trash Taste?
No. Not just that, but at least over 100 videos I've uploaded. This
Good
year.
Good gosh, because that's 2 videos a week.
At some aspect. I mean, December, for example, I've been uploading 2 videos a week.
Trying to cash in on that Christmas revenue, are you?
Yeah, of course.
If you know anybody who's a YouTuber, you'll find they upload a lot of videos in December. Right, also, all my friends do it.
Yeah, it's also because it's the holiday season and people holiday are off season. Work and off school and watching YouTube.
It's the perfect month to upload videos. Yeah. Unfortunately,
it's the Christmas grind and the summer grind.
And I'm stupidly burnt out after Journey Across Japan, so there's like no videos, like two or three videos. Still want to come out, though, in the next few days. But December, that's the key.
Yep.
Because in January, there's no viewers, there's no money. It's just dreadful.
Well, right, and I guess that leads on to the lows of being a YouTuber is that you're kind of at the mercy of YouTube for revenue, right? And I guess, I mean, it would be worse if I were to put all of my eggs into the YouTube basket.
Right.
I know better than that and I'm smarter than that, so I kind of distribute my earnings accordingly.
Yeah.
I mean, YouTube is still majority of my income, but, you know, I do music stuff, I do... you know, streaming stuff. I do voice acting work. I do some modeling work, stuff like that. So I'm kind of just all over the place with what I do.
YouTube is generally quite stable. You do every now and then you hear somebody who had their channel deleted by accident or demonetization is the main factor.
Right.
But yeah, it can be scary. Mm. Generally, I've not had that many issues apart from the whole demonetization era 2 years ago, which is terribly scary when all of your videos suddenly get demonetized for seemingly no reason.
Yeah, I think a third of my videos got demonetized.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
That's pretty rough. Yeah. But
I've recovered most of them, but still, it was a hard hit.
But the highs of YouTube certainly outweigh the lows. Right?
Oh, absolutely. If it was the other way around, I would have quit yesterday.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's cool. And what are some of the videos you're most proud of as a YouTube creator? So what do you refer to yourself as a YouTuber? A YouTube creator? Filmmaker? A commentator.
You know what's the one thing I hate is when people use the word content creator
or influencer.
Ugh.
Disgusting.
I hate that word.
I remember I met someone who was a really good photographer whose dream he told me was to become an influencer. And I just shouted at him for like 10 minutes. Because I hate that. Why would... influencers.
That could mean a slew of things. Martin Luther King was an influencer.
Yeah. Like, I guess he was. Take passion in your craft, though, as an artist.
Right.
You know? Like, I take great pride in filmmaking and writing. And
I mean, I think, you know, people who make content like what you do, I think in that aspect, you can call yourself a filmmaker or an artist or
and
stuff
I guess
like
you'd be more of a critic, because I know you're like me, you're not really interested in the filmmaking aspect, holding a camera, framing it up and editing. You like kind of delivering criticism and being a critic of anime and manga.
Yeah, I definitely did start off more as a critic. You know, I was not really afraid to give my opinions and stuff, because it's just my opinion. And, you know, if you don't like it, then so be it.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I know. I get comments like that every day, don't worry. But yeah, I guess nowadays I've definitely not shared my opinion as much anymore, I think, because I have grown a larger, more general audience.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly found that. I remember hitting a million, and after that, yeah, I became more aware of my opinions I was using.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I've opened up a little bit this year.
Yeah.
I've kind of gone back to it.
Yeah.
Like, one of the dilemmas I have at the moment is I want to make a video on React videos, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know you and I have talked about this, but for those of you that don't know, in the last 2 or 3 months, there's been at least, I think, 25 plus React videos from Japanese YouTubers, mostly smallish channels, some in the 100,000s subscribers.
Mostly, like, below 100,000. Yeah.
And they've been reacting to Abroad Japan videos and giving criticism and thoughts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a fan of React videos. I think they're kind of, like, very
redundant.
Unless you're a professional, maybe, who can offer an insight. Like a doctor,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, but, you know, that's one in a dozen, right?
Like, right.
Every now and then you'll come across a reaction video where they actually give you interesting opinions and topics and, you know, go beyond the actual video, but 99.9% of reaction videos, as far as I'm concerned, is just someone making reaction noises to a video.
Exploitation, perhaps, some people say.
Or, yeah, stealing.
I mean, yeah, I've kind of not known how to interpret it. For example, one of my most watched video on the Abroad Japan channel is called 12 Things Not to Do in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It came out 3 years ago now, and that's got something like 10, 12 million views.
It's like, yeah, it's like 12, 30 million.
I'm not, it's a crazy success. Mm. And that's great, because, you know, that video took about 10 days, I think, to produce. I sat down, I wrote it, I rewrote it, and I went over it, I filmed it out in the streets of Sendai. It was really awkward, because I hate filming in public sometimes.
Oh, same, I hate it.
Really awkward filming on trains and in the streets of Sendai and whatnot. People staring away. They edited that, put it up, and, you know, after a week, well, hey, it's done.
Yeah.
And then someone, and that got 12 million views.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody can react to it in 12 minutes and get a million views plus. It's just like, oh,
yeah.
Why do I bother? God's sake.
It's a different story, though, if, for example, that channel. I mean, I've had this in the past where I've been very publicly open about my distaste towards reaction videos.
Right.
And I think that's the sole reason why my videos very rarely get reacted to.
Right.
Because people know I despise reaction videos, especially to my own content.
What would you do in my shoes? Would you... And this is the thing, right? I mean, my dilemma is, what criticism can I deliver on it?
I think as someone who's getting their content reacted to, I think you have every right to say how you actually feel towards it. Like, you know, if there are two videos, one of them is someone who is actually giving valid criticism and, again, content that exceeds the content that they're reacting to.
Right.
Then I think you can say, hey, that's fair, because you're actually turning, you know, it's transformative.
Mm.
You're adding more content to the content that you're using. So that's fine.
Yeah.
But if the second video, which is most of the Abroad in Japan reaction videos I've seen, is just anime reaction noises.
Yeah.
Then at that point, it's like, well, I might as well show this video to my Roomba and record it, and it'd be the same thing.
I'd watch that.
Yeah. Roomba reacts to Abroad in Japan.
Roomba reacts.
Yeah.
That'd be quality content.
A Roomba would make a little boop boop noise, and it'd be the same level of content as someone just going,
That'll be quality content.
You know? And again, like, I've had cases, though, of people actually emailing me asking if they can react to a certain video.
Mm.
And I always say yes to stuff like that, as long as they're not monetizing the video.
Really?
Yeah. Because as long as they're not making money off of the stuff that I made, then it's fine.
Mm.
Right? Because the sole difference is that they have a camera running.
Right.
Right? Because they'd probably react to it off camera anyway.
I mean, the angle on the videos I've made, so the 12 Things Not to Do in Japan, is, you know, people reacting to it, native Japanese people, and sort of confirming if my thoughts are accurate as a foreigner living in Japan.
Right.
Which makes me feel, on the one hand, that's why I understand why they're popular, right? Because, you know, if I'm a foreigner who's not come to Japan, well, maybe I won't trust this abroad in Japan guy. He's just a British guy who's lived in Japan for a bit. I'll trust the native Japanese guy.
Right.
But then at the same time, it's kind of like, oh, that's depressing that my opinions need to be validated by a native Japanese person. Kind of
as if you aren't already well informed.
I mean, at the point I made that video, I'd lived here 6 years. But I'd spent a great deal of time thinking and reflecting on it, speaking to other Japanese friends to get their views on it. It wasn't me just making it up. And,
yeah.
You know, I took it very seriously.
Yeah.
So it feels a bit like, do my opinions on Japan need to be validated by a native Japanese person?
It is quite backhanded from what I see.
But at the same time, as a channel with almost 2 million subscribers, you have to be kind of, I don't know, you don't want to be a dick to smaller channels, right? And I always want to help other creators.
Because it's considered as, quote-unquote, bullying, right?
Right, and I absolutely don't want to be a dick to these channels.
Right.
So I think if I can deliver some sort of criticism and thoughts on it without being mean to them, and many of them are very nice. They're all pretty nice, down-to-earth people. They're
right.
All, you know, they're not delivering evil criticism. That'd be a whole different ball game. If they were really nasty to me, then it would be open season. I'd go all out, make no doubt about it. But they are nice people.
Right.
Because they're Japanese creators, they're actually quite polite.
They don't know how to be mean.
Yeah, they're very nice. Yeah. So that's something I've got to factor in. And so at the end of the day, is it worth me making a video? Is it actually worth me doing something on it? And the only reason I'm swaying more towards yes is the fact that the Japan Times did an article on it.
Right, which is crazy.
It's quite interesting they did that. So that's something I've got to work out, think about.
Yeah, I guess you have to kind of weigh the circumstances and think, well, you know, is it more beneficial to just leave them be? Or is it negatively affecting your channel in some
aspect?
I think if I could
find a satirical kind of angle, if I'm like reacting to their videos of them reacting to me as I react to Japan,
right?
Then we've got like 4 layers of reaction and that could be quality content.
Yeah, but I guess the one downside to that is Japan doesn't understand satire.
Yes,
so the Japanese reaction channels will probably look at that and be like, wow, this abroad Japan guy's being a dick, even though I reacted to their content and left positive, you know.
Which is what happened to you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is what happened to Jerry, who recently had a thing.
Yeah, so we talked about this on my podcast, Trash Taste. Where it wasn't just Japanese people reacting to your content, but it was Japanese people reacting to Filthy Frank's Weeaboo video. It was Japanese people reacting to Bill Wirt's History of Japan video. Yeah. And it would just not leave our recommended.
Yeah, they've recommended very much across YouTube.
And, you know, that's why they're able to gain all, you know, millions of views. And we just, I mean, me and my two co-hosts, we just found that really, I guess, annoying. And problematic because, again, we would watch these videos because they wouldn't leave our recommended, thinking, well, maybe if YouTube is recommending these videos to us, there might actually be some quality content. 99% are not quality content.
Right.
It's just a bunch of Japanese people, most of them not even speaking Japanese in the videos. They're speaking English.
Yeah.
Kind of just, again, making anime reaction noises and affirming or not affirming by certain, you know, single grunts and just not adding anything to the actual video. And I just think, I look at reaction videos like that and I think, well, this is crap. It's to be honest with you, this is crap. It's you're just taking a popular video,
but then
using it for views and then just doing the laziest thing possible.
And while I don't disagree, the videos still get millions of views.
And they still get millions of views and positive reception from people.
So
it's not like these videos are getting, you know, disliked out of, you know, the platform or anything.
I think that's the angle I should come at it from, as somebody who spends far too much time making videos out in the field, trying to look for Mount Fuji and bloody driving around and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then it's easy to just get views by sitting indoors reacting to things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's something I could think about, but again, it's something I have to think about and reflect on.
Again, it's fine, you know, if you're listening to this and thinking, oh no, if I react to a Anime Man or a Abroad in Japan video, then they're gonna get mad at me. Like, I'm not gonna be mad at people reacting to my content if they're actually providing content,
right? If you're delivering criticism,
if they're providing, you know, positive or negative criticism, I don't even care if it's negative criticism, that's still more content than people just going, yes, or no. And doing the bare minimum, right?
So if you're listening to this, wanting to make some a few hundred thousand views, go out and react to the Anime Man's channel. Yeah. Slag him off, insult him, get those views. I know I'm certainly going to.
I would honestly prefer that over you just being silent watching my videos, to be honest.
I'm going to trash talk your entire channel.
You do that on the daily, so that's all right. That to do, my Joey. Face.
That I do, Joey. That I do. And we'll hear more from Joey next week about his time in Japan,
mm-hmm.
And most importantly, where he'd recommend to visit in Japan, and some comparisons between Australia and Japan as well. So, before that, though, we do have the fax machine. We've got some questions from you guys, and the first one is from Jenna. Says, hello, my name's Jenna, and I'm from Pennsylvania in the US. I've been enjoying the podcast. I just started listening a few weeks ago, and I've pretty much caught up on most episodes. Bloody hell, Jenna. That is quite an achievement, given there's like 200 episodes,
oh,
I think.
Oh, Jesus.
I've currently been spending the past 2 years teaching myself Japanese, and I'm planning to try to speak as much as I can on my first trip to Japan. My trip has been moved twice now because of COVID, so I'm planning for September.
Damn.
Fingers crossed, Jenna. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Let's bloody hope so. I really appreciate all of the advice your podcast has given on Japanese etiquette, and was wondering, when is it appropriate to shorten Japanese phrases? For example, domo arigato gozaimasu. I'd love to hear of more phrases like this where it's appropriate to be more informal and shorten it to like domo or arigato, or if there are other phrases you should use formally. This is my first email I've ever written to the podcast, so hopefully this question makes sense. Thank you guys, have a happy holiday, Jenna. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
The word domo, I found, is single-handedly the most useful Japanese word you will ever use.
It's interesting you say that, because when I interviewed Hyde, the singer, the rock star from Larkin Ciel, I said, what's your favourite Japanese word? Yeah. And he said, domo.
Yeah.
Because he sort of sets the Swiss Army knife of words.
Yeah, there's this great... I don't watch a lot of Japanese TV or watch a lot of Japanese comedians, but there was this one bit I'll always remember. About the word domo, and it's this skit where a guy is on the phone, and he's apologizing to a client,
right,
like in a work environment, and he said, "Watch, I'm gonna do an entire conversation on the phone just by using the word domo, because domo can mean hello, yes, I'm sorry, and goodbye, all depending on the inflection of how you say it. So it can be domo." Domo. Ah, domo. Domo. And he just cuts the phone.
Bloody hell.
And you can have an entire conversation with just domo. Because it's just the, like...
In different forms of intonation.
In different forms of intonation. It can mean anything.
I mean, I use domo, arigato gozaimasu quite a lot. That's like the most polite version, right? Because I'll typically say, ah, domo, arigato gozaimasu. I'll have like a brief pause. But I mean, the rule of thumb with Japanese is the longer the sentence, the more polite it is, right?
Yeah.
And so depending on who you're talking to, if you're talking to like a shop staff... You don't need to be polite. He's like, ah, domo.
Yeah.
Right, or arigato.
Yeah. But if you're meeting the prime minister, then you should probably say, you know, something like, makoto ni arigato gozaimashita, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the most polite of polite that you can say.
I mean, can you think of any other Japanese phrases you can shorten like that? I mean, with keigo, with politeness in Japanese.
I guess maybe...
Verbs. I mean, verbs, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Japanese, I've learned, is very context-heavy.
Yeah.
So you can... There are so many ways that you can shorten a sentence and just say it depending on the context, right? Like, for example, everyone learns, watashi no namae wa blah blah desu.
Blah blah desu.
You know, like, watashi no namae wa Joey desu.
Right, yeah.
Right? But in retrospect, you can just say, watashi wa Joey desu.
Yeah,
you don't have to say namae wa because, of course...
You don't have to say watashi wa. Just,
yeah, you can just say Joey desu.
Kushi desu.
Yeah, Joey desu, kushi desu.
That's the first thing you learn, right? I find Japanese folks... like my friends like Natsuki always make fun of the phrase like watashi no namae wa.
Yeah,
because like you don't do that
right
in Japan, and you wouldn't do it in English really. Like if I met Joe, I'd be like, hello, my name is Chris. Think about that. You'd be like, oh,
I'm a psychopath.
All right, mate, I'm Chris. Yeah. I'm Chris. Yeah. Hello, my name is Chris.
Sometimes you don't even do that. If you go in for a handshake, you just say Joey, Chris.
Yeah. Exactly.
Just say the name. It's all context based, and Japanese especially, I feel, follows that rule more so than often.
The trouble with learning beginner level Japanese is they teach you all this stuff that just sounds weird. But
yeah.
They teach you like watashi no namae wa kurisu desu.
Kore wa pen desu.
Kore wa pen desu.
As if you don't know what a pen is.
It's the one phrase you need.
Yeah.
But I hope that helps, Jenna. Good luck with the studies. I've got one here from a guy. Or girl, no, don't have the name. Just says greetings from Singapore.
Mm.
Oh. After, all right, hello, boys. Some of your listeners are probably already planning their next trip to Japan as soon as the world is opening up again. There is no shortage of ideas on your YouTube channel, this podcast, or simply the internet. But I was wondering, which location or activity has the biggest revisiting potential for you two? A place to be or a thing to do that you could always come back to? An example would be feeding deer in Nara or the Sapporo Snow Festival. Been there, done that. It was nice, but I wouldn't want to go again. And is there only so many shrines you can muster enthusiasm for? Roaming through izakayas or visiting a kabuki show, however, is revisit worthy for me. What are some classics you're always drawn to? I guess it's a good question for Pete. That's unfortunately he's not here. As he's experienced the country as a tourist. Something completely different. Chris, that's another question. Another question from our greedy listener here.
Singapore.
From Singapore, with no name. Chris, how do you introduce yourself when you meet new people? I've just answered that, the last one. I'm asking because you described yourself as a filmmaker in Norm's podcast some time ago. Greetings from Singapore, no name.
I'm Chris the filmmaker.
Hello, I'm Chris the filmmaker. What I should know my heart.
That should have been your YouTube title.
What?
Your YouTube name, Chris the filmmaker.
Boku wa Eizo Saka. No, Chris
this.
I'm filmmaker Chris. I just say, hi, I'm Chris. I don't actually say I'm a YouTuber because that's just awkward.
I don't. When my rule of thumb when introducing myself is A, I never introduce myself as the anime man because that's just weird.
Yeah, I'd probably be going over here now.
Even if I'm meeting another YouTuber.
Right.
Like, immediately, I don't want them to call me the anime man.
Yeah.
I want them to call me by my actual name.
Dave.
And secondly, I never say that I'm a YouTuber or what my channel is unless they ask.
Yeah, and that's right, you know. It's only,
you know, if
humble.
They say, like, what do you do? Then I'll be like, oh, I make YouTube videos.
What do you do?
You don't know who I am.
Yeah.
I'm the anime man.
I'm verified on Twitter, goddammit.
Verified on Twitter. You haven't seen my video about what not to do in Japan? Yeah. Got 12 million views. No, I just say, I'm Chris. I make videos. And if they go, what do you mean? I go, like a YouTube thing. YouTube.
Because I don't know whether they know YouTube.
Well, it's still, YouTube's been around for, you know, 10, 15 years now, but it's still a bit awkward to refer to yourself as a YouTuber. And I can't really call myself a filmmaker yet. Because I'm like, what have you made? I'm like, oh, a YouTube video.
YouTube films.
Did a video where I saw Mount Fuji once. Yeah. It was good. On the subject of places with revisiting potential, though.
Man, I'm trying to think.
I mean, for me, Osaka is somewhere I can revisit over and over.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And do often.
Yokohama for me as well. I can always go
Yokohama.
Back to.
Why?
I don't know. There's just so many. I feel Yokohama is just less hectic Tokyo. You know,
it's by the sea, so you kind of feel a bit.
Yeah,
more.
And I mean, you know, Yokohama is still the, you know, the second most populated city in Japan. But it just, I don't know. Every time I go to Yokohama, I know in the back of my head, I'm like, this is a very heavily populated city. But when you actually go to Yokohama, it's surprising how spacious the entire city is,
right?
And the general area is, and it's because a lot of places in Tokyo, especially inner Tokyo, just feel so claustrophobic and cramped with everything.
Whereas
Yokohama's has the same, you know, amenities and things to do as Tokyo, but it's somehow way more spacious.
And it's got a good Chinatown.
And it has a great Chinatown.
The food in Chinatown is outstanding.
And you get to, you know, experience the and enjoy the coastline as well of Yokohama, which is lovely.
Yeah, Minato Minai, is it? No, sorry, that's...
No, that's
Odaiba.
Odaiba, yeah. Just Yokohama...
It's Minato Minai, isn't it?
No, Minato... No. I gotta look it up.
Look it up. All right, while you do that, we got one here from Andrew, a Scot living in Canada. Hi, Chris and Pete. Discovered your channel a couple of months ago after seeing the Trash Taste guys plug it in their drifting video. And I've been binging your videos since then. Thank you, Joey, for plugging me. I enjoyed that. For those of you that haven't seen it...
Oh, Minato Mirai is Yokohama, yeah.
Hey, vindicated. Yes, for those who haven't seen it, Joey did a drifting day... in drifting day.
You're really selling this video.
A special experience for a special boy. Now, Joey went to Ebisu Race Circuit with Connor Sea Dog VA and Gant, and they went and did some drifting. And I was the cameraman.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
You kind of just appeared in the video. We didn't really even introduce you.
Yeah, I was like in the back. It was pretty shoddily done.
In the back of the drifting car. And it's like, oh, by the way, Chris is here as well.
Very poorly produced. But it was fun, and I did the drone. So if you watched their video, Drifting, which came out about a month ago, 2 months ago now.
Yeah, almost 2 months ago at this point.
Yeah, all the drone shots, that was me.
Yeah.
And that was really quite
fun. And
that
really made the videos, to be honest.
Definitely did. Yeah, don't underestimate the power of drones.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew continues. Each video you've made has made me more keen to finally visit Japan. And it's top of my travel priority list once the pandemic is over. My question is regarding my plan when I visit Japan. I plan to propose to my girlfriend. Wow.
Oh.
I hope she doesn't listen, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah.
Just giving away Andrew a Scot in Canada. he's pretty specific.
My girlfriend's in Sydney. Like,
oh,
what?
God. I want to propose a real-life location of one of her favourite movies, Your Name, at the Suga Shrine in Yotsuya.
Oh.
Well, I'm worried whether this will be possible if it is a bustling area. Have you been to Suga Shrine? Do you know whether I'll be able to get down on one knee and end up getting knocked down the stairs? Additionally, what is the Japanese view on the proposals in public places? Regards, Andrew, Scott in Canada.
Well, I've actually had a friend of mine who proposed to his now wife inside Tokyo Tower.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And that was, I mean, he showed me the video and it was, you know, Tokyo Tower was pretty packed.
Did everyone clap?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. There was definitely...
like, get out of the fucking way.
No, there was one woman in the video who made the most audible gasp I've ever heard. Like, which was kind of cute. But, I mean, I've personally never been to Suga Shrine, which you'd think I would be someone who has visited Your Name locations.
You certainly would.
I was going to do a video on it, but I just ran out of time, unfortunately.
Lazy. He's the anime man. He hasn't been to the site of like the biggest anime film of all time, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I've been to Yotsuya before, because I have a few friends who live there. And it seems pretty quiet for the majority.
Yeah, Yotsuya is actually not too busy.
Yeah.
So I think... to be honest, Andrew, you'll be in luck. But no, you won't get knocked down.
I've had lots of friends who have taken pictures at the very staircase he's talking about, and it's very few people there.
Yeah,
so I think you'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Get it done. Good luck, Andrew. And once it happens, let us know. Send us some photos.
You got to play the Your Name opening as soon as she says yes.
You've got to do it, Andrew.
Yeah,
you've got
to
do it.
Just to do it, yeah.
Good luck with that. And again, I hope she's not listening. Otherwise, that's ruined. And you're going to have to choose...
otherwise, it'll be very awkward.
You're going to have to choose a location out of Spirited Away or something.
Yeah, or just propose on the spot as you're both listening to this podcast.
Perfect. Do that. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Joey and I will be back on Sunday, where I will interrogate him on the cultural differences between Japan and Australia, and also find out his top 6 locations across the country. Looking forward to it, Joey?
Yeah.
Me too. We'll see you then, guys. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production
and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this yeah. shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.